B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby.
Shimma, shimma. Shimma, shimma. Shimma, shimma.
Let me in.
Shimma, shimma.
I want to be closer to you.
Shimma, shimma.
Open up your soul.
Shimma, shimma.
Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your mind.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Today's show is entirely pre-recorded, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
A lot of you know San Francisco's a place that loves its film festivals. We've got film festivals practically every month of the year, and they're all fantastic. One of the ones we haven't heard from in a while is the Green Festival. I'd like to welcome one of the participants of the Green Festival, Ime Etuk. Hello.
Hello, hello, and thank you for inviting me into your space.
Thank you for being on the show today. So tell me a little bit about your involvement with the festival.
Well, my feature narrative film, Outdoor School, has been selected to play this coming weekend. And that is my involvement. I am the writer, director, producer of the film.
Okay. Talk a little bit about, have you been a documentarian for very long?
Yeah, so this is a narrative film. I do dabble in documentary. But more time spent in narrative. And really, I've been involved in storytelling, I guess, for a long time. It really started kind of in journalism. And then from there, I always had an interest in film. I just didn't know how to be a film maker and make a living. And journalism is what made sense. But also journalism was responding to events and not getting to create or curate as much. And so that's kind of what drew me into the narrative side of filmmaking, which includes documentaries, getting to choose the content that I highlight.
Okay, so what content do you favor? What do you like to highlight?
It ends up sometimes, I mean, it doesn't have to be true stories, but part of my process for this film was actually interviewing the people who experienced it in real life. So I had authentic voices to bring to the story. Most of the things that I am drawn to deal with some type of duality of existence. Growing up in Portland, Oregon, which is not very diverse. Growing up Black in Portland, but also Nigerian. So my home life was different than outside my doors. And then I was in a school where, you know, one of the only Black kids, and then I had a different home life. So, you know, in this story, young Melvin Chambry, who at 12 years old in 1994, is living under a tree with his mother and sister by night, fleeing domestic violence. But by day, he's a kid in middle school with his prized possession, neon Deion Sanders Nike patent leather shoes that are the badge of honor that covers his poverty, because if you have nice shoes, you can't be poor. So he goes to nature and he goes to camp. And has a transformative experience in nature, and learns that some things are more valuable than the shoes. And so I think that part of how we got connected with the Green Festival is that there is an outdoor component. There's a nature component, as that is where his transformation happens.
Okay. So you chose this because you could relate to the duality of his existence as well, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. And how did you find this story?
So I knew Vin Chambry, the actor, who I met on a film set, on a commercial, as a matter of fact, for the Super Bowl some years ago, filming in Portland, Oregon, a Secret commercial for the Secret deodorant, filmed by Alice Mathias, the director. And he was an actor. And I was like, hey, what's up, man? Where are you from? He says, Portland. I'm like, wait, you're from Portland? I'm from Portland. We don't know each other. We're both Black. Like, what are, you know, and we're both doing this. We should do something. That was the beginning. Then I I got to know him, and there was another project that I really wanted to work with him on. But I got that. As long as you get an impression in your spirit, like you kind of know a thing, and it was like he has something to give you creatively for your project. So I took him to coffee. Like, I don't want to be weird, but I feel like there's something you have creatively to give to this project I'm working on that I want you to act in. And he's like, I don't know, but I can tell you my life story, which he told me. And I was just like, phew. And that was the moment where I was like thankful I was, listening and obedient. And I did not realize that he had actually shared this on the Moth Live Storytelling. And that this was also always a known story because they had, on their podcast, it was popular and it would end up in a New York Times bestselling book, so much so that they put it in two different books. So I just knew I needed to tell the story. And so it grew and it was going to be a short film. And then it grew. And also, I have a nonprofit training marginalized communities behind the camera. And so it became like, hey, we're going to tell this film and we're going to train filmmakers of color.
Very
And so now it was both things. And so that also was part of the engine that helped get it to the screen, because, there's a different passion that you have when you're fighting for someone that's not just you or not just to make a film. So it's like, yeah, I need resources to train people and pay them to learn on a real film about their community. And it worked.
Excellent. Now, by the time this airs, which is Monday, it would already have been shown in the festival. Let me ask you this about your journey as a filmmaker. Earlier, you said you didn't really know how to make a film. So, how did you go about figuring out how to do it for those people out there who are like you or like, I have something to say, but I don't know how to say it?
Yeah, so the journey to making a film, especially a feature-length film, it really just starts with taking that step and green-lighting yourself. I think, the way my mind works is, I feel like I need to build the ship before I go sailing. But yet, there's a guy I'd worked with where he would start films that weren't even fully funded and he would pull me in to help make them, and they would get made. And I'm thinking, well, I don't have to build the whole ship to sail. I just need to, there's other ways to sail. You can borrow a boat, you can use someone else's boat. So how can I not create barriers or move my cheese, and so be willing to start small. Nowadays, if you have a phone, you have a camera that is more sophisticated than a lot of the high-end cameras from just 10 to 15 years ago,
That's
.
true.
And so, but it's about saying yes to yourself. But then I think the hardest part nowadays, if you're a filmmaker, is how do you not compare yourself to other people while you're learning? Many of the people who have projects that you admire, some of their first projects weren't great, for me, because some of my journey before I started directing was working as an assistant director on some larger projects, some that won Academy Awards, some that were big TV shows. But then when I was going, and I was as an assistant director, so I'm next to the people, I know the people I'm helping, but I'm not leading the creative. Meant that, I had to learn that when I'm making my projects, not to judge it on the same merits because I haven't worked that muscle as well as the people I'm working alongside. And I'm not going to have the same kind of budget, So that's a message I try to give people now. It's like, don't hinder yourself for what you're not. Just go out there, and repetition is the mother of all skill. So the more you do it, the better you get. You don't have to be great to start. Just know that the goal is to end great, not to start great.
So with that start grade, what was your starting project, the one that you felt was that you were completely in control of?
Well, this is the first project I've probably felt fully in control of. That because from the inception of the idea, I was there. It wasn't one. I've had projects that I've taken and reworked and rewritten and kind of made them mine and made them what they ended up being. But this is the first one that from the moment the idea dropped and where I was the engine. I've been on projects where someone was the engine, but they couldn't get it all the way there. And it is a director to take it and help direct and produce and shape it. But now it was like, oh, I'm the engine. So this doesn't go unless I take my passion, my energy, my vision, my intuition, all those things, and push it in the same direction to find what this film is and to get the fruit that I'm hoping for. And so that
So
was.
when you say you're the engine and you differentiate that from where you didn't feel you had complete, so what are all the things you are touching to get this project moving forward? I think of a director as just simply focusing on direction, and you have the writers who do this and the editors who do this, but it sounds like there's more to it.
Yes, and on this project also, because I was the writer. So that was, so other projects, I had the luxury of taking, and I'm very good at taking other people's things and saying, oh, tweak this, tweak that, that's, we all have different gifts. That's what I find. I can take a thing, tell you how to make it better. But to start from like the idea, although this one, there still was an idea because there was a 7-minute film, but to take that and sit down and start first draft, it was me. And write out this script of 90 plus pages, and then rewrite it and develop it, and interview the people who lived it, and all those things that go into it, as the writer and as a producer, to go out and figure out, well, where do I get money to make this thing? As a short film, I had ideas. I own cameras. I have a production company. I got buddies who have, it's like, oh, we can work together and make this little short film because we're inspired. But as it grew to what it became, and you need a feature with actors and bigger budgets and more people and training people. Now I need a whole system, and it has to be funded to be successful. And the people I want to help behind the camera, they have to be paid, because if you don't have generational wealth, that's a barrier to accessing entertainment. So I want to remove that barrier, which means now I have to find a way to find partnerships and other people that believe in this vision to bring this thing to fruition.
That's amazing. So you were able to find partners. Were these people who felt that they were taking a chance on a new talent, or did your prior experience give them the confidence to go, oh yeah, sure, here's a bunch of cash, do whatever you want?
My prior experience absolutely impacted them. And then my other producing partners, who have different experiences. And but all some in acting. One was an actor on Broadway and did theater, and it's his stories about him. One was a producer, did a lot of news, and has some Emmys. And so there was the things we've done, and I've worked on a lot of, again, big projects. Like I did Training Day, I did Crash, and so these did Twin Peaks with, so the latest one. So it's like those helped a lot, but they also were bought in because a lot of them have a connection to outdoor school, because outdoor school is a rites of passage that pretty much every sixth grader in Oregon goes through and has for over 50 plus years. So just keeping that name, people have an outdoor school story, and people were invested in that. And so it was kind of this perfect intersection of, here's a story on the moth, which they will publicize it. They change the name of this short story in the second book. They put it into outdoor school so it would mirror the film. And so now they're on board to help out. You've got this outdoor school that people are, so there's just, so it just kind of, it perfectly aligned, and people were like, this sounds like something that could go in the story. The person that gave him these shoes happened to be Tinker Hatfield, arguably the most famous shoe designer in the world for all the Air Jordans he's designed. So now it was like, these things that just kind of aligned, and it's like, if we can figure out how to harness that energy in one direction, it seemed like, okay, maybe this thing could even, not lose money. So I think that helped people
Okay,
come on
now I
board.
want to talk about this concept of outdoor school because it sounds like it's an Oregon thing because I don't know anything about it. So can you talk about that?
Absolutely. It is mostly an Oregon thing, although there's a campaign to try to get more kids outside. But outdoor school is a 1-week experiential education experience where kids will go outside the classroom, and for 1 week they'll be at camp in cabins. They'll learn about testing the soil, testing the water, learn about life, wildlife, the world around them, get a chance to see their classmates and teachers in a different environment. Everyone has a camp name. You have a wood cookie necklace with your camp name on it. And so it's a chance to experience the world around you in a different way. And also, for a lot of young people, it's their first time away from home. For me, it was my first time away from home. Had my sisters not gone, I probably wouldn't have been able to go, because convincing, your family that just worked hard to come all the way to America that you want to go sleep outside was like,
Yep.
why? We were in a small village. Why would you want to do that?
Right.
but it is, that's what outdoor school is. Kids go and they learn a lot about science, but in a fun way.
Oh, okay.
You're catching tadpoles, you're testing water, you're doing a lot of different activities, learning how to cook on a little burner,
Okay. And so the story dovetails because he's outdoor school, but he's also outdoor home, but his home still is different than the outdoor school.
Correct. So it's kind of a double entendre. So people who aren't familiar with outdoor school are just like, oh, outdoor school, I get it. He's outside, which he is. And then people that are from the area who see that title and they're like, oh, it has a visceral reaction to them. And some of them are like later on are like, oh, he's also out. So people from Oregon are just like, outdoor school, I get it. People not from Oregon see the other side of that, those two words, and like, oh, he was outdoors and he was living there. That was a school, it was learning, it was a life experience. So it's both.
Now you talk about how your existence at home differed from when you would walk out the door. Being raised in a Nigerian family, like what were some of the things that were radically different from everyone else's? Because immigrants, across the board have the same story. The kid is going to school and everyone's eating like a peanut butter sandwich and they have like what they, other people consider
Yeah.
like weird, like fish.
Yeah.
So what was your experience?
At school I wouldn't bring Nigerian food because it was too much,
Oh, okay.
but things like now
I bet it's
everyone
delicious.
it is amazing. So everyone eats goat now, right?
Okay.
Goat goat.
Birria, yeah.
Yeah. Well, goat, so goat's not foreign. And back in the day it was like, oh no, I don't want people to know we're eating goat. Like, if they come over, like, oh, don't tell them this is goat in the soup because, unless you were, unless we had people in the neighborhood that were from like Jamaica or Mexico, so weren't, wasn't a lot of diversity. It's like no one's eating goat. It's like you're doing some kind of crazy savage thing to eat a goat. And now it's like you go to the store, you can order, goat lamb or whatever, So it's, and then there's just, outside my house was just like, oh, this black kid has a different kind of name. But inside, I mean, a typical immigrant story, it's like, your parents are, they don't want to see you come home with a B. It's like, B is failure, so succeed at all costs, So it's the thing that you didn't sign up for directly, but you inherited it, right? Because your parents didn't come to this country to not succeed. And they came with the burden of helping people and their family back home in a country you didn't grow up knowing, So while, as I got older and realized that over there, my cousins had like our pictures on their mantle, it's like, this is this faraway place that I don't know about, but I'm, so it's, so, but also when I go to school, like I'm, what I know is America, So my family seems different to me because it's not what's other kids around me experience, So I say, trauma, growing up Nigerian back in the day is, your friends coming, and I'm in Portland, so your white friends coming over in your basement, they open the freezer and there's like a burned goat head. It's like, oh, they're gonna think we're savages. This is, I don't know. Oh, that's for the soup for later, This is a,
Well, then let me ask you this. Are your parents still living?
Yeah, my mom passed, dad's still around.
Okay. Do your parents consider all of the things that you do in film, do they consider that success, or is it still the why aren't you a doctor or why don't you work at PG&E?
Yeah, that's so funny because I have a documentary talking about this that I'm working on. They believe it's a success,
Oh, good.
but it's, yeah. So they, but not all. Some parents I still know, there's stories of people who were very successful, but because they're doing something, it seems like it's a game, Like when I was in high school, my dad was like one sport, and I loved basketball, but I was a bigger guy, and the football coach saw me, and the first day he's like, "Hey, Tuck, on the field at 3 o'clock." And so I was on the field because he told me to be there. And my dad's like, "That's your sport. You don't get a second one." So
Oh.
it's those things that it's the immigrant story because it the things that don't make sense in their mind because like, oh, you can't survive or feed a family or help your family back home. as a musician or as a or as an art. Oh, he's, I used to have long dreads. I remember going to Nigeria and, Lagos, big city. It was nothing, but went down to like the village, and it's like, what's going on here? Ah, he is an artist. He is, oh, it's okay. It's okay. He's an artist. You're an artist. Like, that's why you.
Got it, got it. So, with your film Outdoor School, is there planning to be a wider release?
Yes, Outdoor School will finish the festival circuit probably end of first quarter-ish 2026, and then there will be a wider release. It'll start regionally, of course, hitting the places that know about the original Outdoor School, and then go from there.
Excellent, excellent. And if people wanted to find out more about your career and what you're doing, do you have an online presence?
I do. For the film, outdoorschoolmovie.com or at Instagram at outdoorschoolmovie. For my personal self, Instagram at IMEETUK at IMEETUK or IMEETUK.com. And for the nonprofit work, lionspeaks.org, if you want to see about how we're trying to change the industry one film at a time.
And so we're just about out of time. So, is there anyone you want to send a shout out to?
Just thank you to all the people who came to support the film, my lovely wife April, and family, kids, for supporting me on this journey that has me bouncing around America at times. So thank y'all.
Well, writer, director, producer, Ime Aituk, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, DJ. I appreciate you.
Africans, please listen to me as Africans, and you non-Africans, listen to me with open mind. Suffer for world, now your fault be that. Me I say, now your fault be that. Suffer for world. Now your fault be that. Me I say, now your fault be that. You all to please take your minds out of this musical contraption and put your minds into any goddamn church, any goddamn mosque, any goddamn celestial, including Seraphim and Cherubim. We are all there now. Our minds are in those places. Here we go. Suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go they call.
Amen.
Allahu Akbar. Suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go, they call Allahu Akbar. Open your eye everywhere. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na enjoyment, Imam na gbaladun. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na. na enjoyment. Imamu na gbaladunwe ra 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 ra. My sister waiting, you go here. Archbishop de for London, Pope de for Rome, Imam de for Mecca. Archbishop de for London, Pope de for Rome, Imam de for Mecca. My people, them go, they follow Bishop.
Amen.
Them go follow Pope. Them go follow Imam.
Amen.
Them go go for London.
Amen.
Them go go for Rome. Them go go for Mecca.
Amen.
Them go carry all the money.
Amen.
Them go Juba Bishop, Juba Pope, Juba Imam. Them
Amen.
Go start to yab themselves.
Amen.
In spirit from heaven is Every day for house, every day for road, every day for bus, every day for work, every day for house, every day for road, every day for bus, every day for work. My people, my people, my people.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, y'all know that I love me some October Halloween-esque things. I love horror movies. I especially love horror shows. And there's a horror show that's about to happen that we're going to hear about. I'd like to welcome our ghoul du jour, John Fisher. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem. So tell me a little bit about this ghouls show that you got coming up.
It's a theater rhinoceros. It's called Ghouls, Zombies, and Psychos. And it's about Halloween night when the ghouls, zombies, and psychos take over San Francisco.
Excellent. Excellent. Whose idea was this show, or was this something that you just had that you came across?
It's something that I came up with the idea. I wanted to do something on Halloween. We weren't actually doing anything. And the Halloween in the Castro is kind of rocking. There's a night market. There are Halloween movies. And so we thought, well, let's do a live theater thing. So there are two shows on Halloween night at 7 and 9 p.m. And for anybody who loves horror movies, it is horrifying. But it's also uplifting because it's about fighting back against ghouls and zombies.
I love it. So
yes.
What's the premise?
The premise is that ghouls, zombies, and psychos are taking over the city. And we need help because, of course, the people you trust, you can't trust because any of your relatives could be a ghoul.
Mm.
So you have to be very careful about who you talk to and trust. And fortunately, the Trump administration lends some help by sending in the National Guard. And they fly in and dump zombie spray all over everybody. But that doesn't work because zombies are already dead.
Mm.
So in typical screwed up Trump fashion, it's like the wrong spray at the wrong time. And so the zombies just keep coming back. And so the people have to take it into themselves. And it's the citizens who figure out how to take care of the ghouls, zombies, and psychos. But more than anything, it's just an excuse for blood to splatter all over the place and knives and stabbings and screaming.
Very cool. Now you I've been to Theater Rhinoceros when you guys have been like climbing up over the walls and everything.
That's right.
Is that what you're going to be doing this time?
Oh, it's all over the place. It's on the walls, it's on the ceiling, it's a real gymnastics show because, of course, ghouls, zombies, and psychos, you know, they have no constraints. They can do whatever they want. And so the poor San Franciscans have to learn how to fight back, and that's just to out-ghoul them.
Okay, so ghouls and psychopaths, they move pretty quickly, but what genre of zombies do you have? Do you have the shambling ones or the ones that can move really quickly?
They fake shamble, and then when you trust them, they sort of pounce on you. So they don't trust a zombie. They're liars. All
Don't
these
trust a zombie, they're liars. Words
the
to live.
ghouls and zombies are liars. And so if you see somebody coming at you and they're like your relative and they're like, "Hey, mom, don't trust it. It could be a ghoul, and that's possessed your relative." And if you see some old zombie shuffling at you, groaning, get the hell out of there because the thing's just going to spring on you. It's not like the slow moving zombies from the Night of the Living Dead. These are fast. This is a new generation of zombie. They figured it out.
I like that.
Right. Yeah, they're crazy. So it's like it's no constraints. I mean, they clawed themselves out of the dirt for a reason. They want to suck your blood.
So
Yeah.
this is a documentary, yes?
It's a documentary. It's a how-to. It's a lesson for young people everywhere. It's very instructional. It's like going to driver's ed. You're going to
Ah.
come out of here with abilities you never thought you could possess.
I love it. So, who all's in the show?
It's me and some actors who I just had in Othello, and they're all like really funny. A guy named John Thomas and Zobo and Basharad. So it's a really fun group. They all do a lot of sketch comedy stuff. So they're like perfect for this. They're just very, very determined and full of energy and very, very silly.
Now, is there any audience participation, or is it look but don't touch?
It's look but don't touch, but we can touch you. Yeah, we make you sign a waiver. You have to sign a waiver before you sit down.
Because of all the blood?
Yeah, because it's pretty scary, you know, and we can't have you having to pop a lot of pills during it to take care of your heart. Yeah, it's sort of a nerve shattering thing, you know. So be warned, it's going to be the scariest 45 minutes in the city.
Is there a
Right?
particular way one should dress, given that you said there's a lot of blood?
Well, we're going to give you a big hefty bag, which you can wear like as a sweater. You can just crawl into your hefty bag. You cut a hole for your head, and then you'll be fine. I mean, you can wear your Angora to this. You can wear your real
Wedding
fur,
dress.
the fur that you shouldn't own, but you do. Well, like you inherited, that you inherited from your grandma. That's okay. Yeah, but no, it's a fun show, and if there's any blood on you, it'll be covered by the baggie that we give you, and the baggie's free of charge. We don't charge you for a hefty bag. It's not extra. Yeah.
So, once again, when and what days and what times?
It's at Theater Rhinoceros, which is in the Castro. It's at 4229 18th Street. That's 4229 18th Street. It's on Halloween night, so October 31st, 2025. It's at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m.
Okay, so there's two shows, but one night only.
There's two shows. If you have to do your laundry, come at 7, then you can go home and do your laundry. If you want to do your laundry first, you can come to the 9 o'clock. If you don't want to do your laundry at all, you can come to both shows.
And then, how do people get tickets in advance?
They get them online at therhino.org. That's therhino.org.
And will people be able to purchase tickets at the door?
Yeah, we always save some seats for zombies and ghouls and people who didn't get their act together. And unlike every other theater in town, it's not like $15 ahead of time and $45 if you come and buy it at the door. All the prices are the same. You don't get punished for coming at the last minute.
Okay. All
Yeah.
right. Well, and if people want to find out more about the show, where do they go online?
Therhino.org. That's therhino.org. And we're doing a bunch of things, but you'll recognize the poster. It's got all these zombie hands reaching for you. So you'll know where the zombies are.
Excellent. Well, John Fisher, once again, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Marilyn. Go KPOO. You are the best radio station and been around forever. I love you guys.
I'm looking down the hole, you're looking up at me. You're cold and tired, that is easy to see. Lower the rope to you, a bucket on the line. Your membrane will be soft and smooth, and your heart will be mine. It rubs the lotion on its skin, or as it gets the hose again. It rubs the lotion on its skin, or as it gets the hose again. Yes, fresh as it gets the hose.
Listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. You know, we do blues well. We do music well. There are lots of people in this world who do music very well. One of those people is about to thrill you with the show that's coming up. I'd like to welcome Sonny Bland. Hello.
How you doing, Miss Marilyn?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Fantastic.
So before we get started about the show that you've got coming up, when did you decide that you wanted to be a musician?
Well, at a very young age, my dad used to put me on the stage with some drums, and I would play the drums. And then in 2006, a friend came to me. His name was Ro Harpo. And he said, man, you need to sing, man, because Johnny Taylor's sons and so on and so on. So I said, yeah, well, if they can do it, I sure can do it. So I embarked on a singing career in 2006, and I've just been pushing forward and forward and trying to keep my dad's flavor alive. I'll never be as great as my dad, but I keep his legacy alive. And my number one thing is to people, if people don't know who Bobby Blue Bland was, I let them know.
My parents listened to Bobby Blue Bland when I was growing up. So their favorite, I remember them, was 36, 22, 36. So
yeah,
that was my intro to Bobby Blue Bland.
Wow. And that is a heck of a song, because just, the dynamic, the incomparable, when they built my dad up in that song, and he was every bit of that. Those accolades, those adjectives they put on him, mm-hmm. That was Bobby. Bobby was all that in a bag of chips. And he could not read or write, which is such a very profound thing to me, that you couldn't read or write, but you went in the studio and you sang these songs so fluently, like you read them, like you studied them. And people just, and then for my dad to his demise with dementia, forgetting everything. My dad was incredible on remembering lyrics. Mm-hmm. And then my mom would whisper in his ear. That was another good point about it. All the recording sessions, my mom, Miss Doreen, was whispering in the ear of my dad to tell him the lyrics, because he couldn't read or write.
Wow. So growing up, I've got two questions. So most people who are in families, in performing arts families, or especially when they have someone who's super famous, as a child, you don't experience that fame. They're just your dad or your mom. So at what point did you recognize that your dad was a force to be somebody, as opposed to just your dad who's a musician and knows all these musician friends?
Well, first of all, I always knew my dad was famous at a young age because of the people that I was around, because when I was real young, they had a festival called the Cool Jazz Festivals, and I was in charge of driving all the famous people to the stage at all these various stadiums. Mm-hmm. And so I knew my dad was great because he was among great people. And I never was allowed to get autographs. I never was allowed to be on somebody's jock. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You had to be... These people that you're around are just regular people, because you're a star. I'm a star. As being a little sunny boy, I was a star, so I could never say, oh, dad, that's a David Bowie, or that's Mick Jagger, dad. You know what I mean? Hey, look, because yes. I was around these people. Stevie Wonder, dad, Ray Charles, Barry White, you name it. I was around them, like they were just part of the crew. We were all part of this big menagerie of musicians and famous people, but you could not be like on anybody's shop. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that was just something I learned how to navigate through it. But in the back of my mind, I was like, oh man, I really liked being around those people. But it was a good time.
So basically you understood it because of who your daddy hung out with. You're like, he must be something.
Yes. Well, I knew my dad was something, because we were around B.B. King from the jump. It was always Bobby and B.B., my dad, a lot of people didn't know. No, my dad was B.B. King's bus driver. He was my dad's, he was B.B. King's limo driver.
Wow.
My dad started out being a bus driver for Junior Parker. And Junior Parker had a song called Turning Wheel. A lot of you blues aficionados would know about Junior Parker. Mm-hmm. But my dad came out the Army and started driving for Junior Parker. Next thing you know, he was driving for B.B. And then from there, he was crowned the Prince of the Blues once at Memorial Auditorium. They had B.B. King, and that's where they did the song, the album, Together Again. He said, I'm sorry. Bobby's so sorry. And that's where they crowned it. And I had the trophy that they gave my daddy was, you know, crowning him as the prince of the blues, and BB is the king of the blues. It was a monumental time, you know. But yeah, I'm really glad to be coming to Oakland on the 25th to perform with Rick Warren Media. It's going to be real, real good. It's Art and Music Festival. We'll be in downtown Oakland. That's Rick, Mr. Dr. Warren. He's giving the event, and I'll be singing there. And it's going to be in downtown Oakland. And then on the 26th, we'll be at the Henry Kaiser Center, Henry J. Kaiser. And that's in Oakland. And we will be having there'll be the award show, and I'll be getting an award for Hall of Fame. I'll be in the BMA's Hall of Fame, finally. You know what I mean? I've been trying to get, you know, get my name in stone, and it's really just a gratifying time. I know I'm going to wear my tux and my patent leather shoes, and I'm going to give a long acceptance speech, but I want to thank I want to thank the Black Music Association for all those people that need tickets. They need to call Rick Warren at 916-399-0842. Once again, 916-399-0842. And they need to call Rick about tickets or whatever, because it's going to be nice. It's going to be a classy affair. And it's they're serving a 5-course meal dinner. And, you know, your station's being honored. KPOO's being honored. All the DJs will be receiving awards, you know, including yourself, Miss Marilyn. So you must put this on your calendar for the 26th of October. You got to be there.
I can't be there because I'm in Portland, but everyone will be there.
Well, you'll get your award. It'll be you know, one of your cohorts or Mr. Johnson will pick up your award, because all the DJs are being honored. The DJ X1, the hip hop DJ, you, Miss Gaynor, Barbara Gaynor, if you're listening, we love you, Barbara. And everybody's going to be honored, because, you know, KPOO has been around forever, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Without you guys, I even, you know, I don't know. I was kind of prompting this. I said, man, look. And then Mr. Warren said, hey, man, we got to give this station a award, because they've been around for a long, long time supporting the Black community. And, you know what I mean? And Bobby Webb, we got to give an award to Bobby Webb. Because, you know, I miss Bobby so bad, because he was my good friend. And, you know, many days I came up from Sacramento and helped him carry his stacks of CDs into the place. You know what I mean? Me and Bobby, you know, I miss Bobby Webb. Long live Bobby Webb's memory. And just, you know, so, you know, and Fillmore Slim, I just talked to him last night, and he's going to be in Los Angeles at the Whiskey A Go-Go on November 1st. Okay. So I'll be going down to L.A. to be with the Godfather. He's doing a big show at the Whiskey A Go-Go. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be in Portland November 7th for the Spare Room, which is going to be a real festive event. For 2 years, I've been trying to get a gig there. You know, I was like, I got to get a gig at the Spare Room, because it's in the hood. Uh-huh. But I went to Portland and had a gig outside of Portland. It was in Tigard, which is right outside of Portland.
Yeah, I know.
And I got about 100 people, but it wasn't a sold out show. But this show is at 4830 Northeast 42nd Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97218. And that's the Spare Room on November 7th. If you guys can come on out and see me, all you people from Portland, I really, you know, they're going to be in Portland. Come on out. We're going to have a good time. But on the 25th, I will be in downtown Oakland, which is next weekend.
Okay. And you've got who's going to be performing with you, or is it just you?
Well, I'll be performing, and there'll be a lot of other people performing. I don't know what the lineup is. It's a big lineup. I'm pulling it up right now. It's called the Oakland Soul, October 25th, Arts and Music Festival. Saturday, we'll be at the Henry J. Kaiser Center Performing Arts, located on 10th Street. Everyone is invited to come to celebrate the culture, music, and family at the Oakland Soul Arts and Music Festival. So all you people should Google that, Oakland Soul Art and Music Festival on the 25th. And then my girlfriend will be having her art exhibit at the Oakland Festival. Mm-hmm. And Gia's going to have a exhibit of her art. Say hello, Gia, to the people.
Hi.
And yeah, Gia's going to have her new art that she's done. She has a series of like projects that she's doing.
We'll get right back with you, Gia. We love you.
Thanks.
All right.
And so, you know, everything is going well. I have a 20-city tour that's being formulated right now, and I'm really excited about it. It's called Daddy's Shoes. Mm-hmm. And where I'm at right now, by the way, is one of the sponsors. His name is Brian. And Hat Daddy, are you around? Stick your head out and say hello to Miss Marilyn. She's from K-Poo. Yeah, you know, he's one of my...
Miss Marilyn, Brian Jones, owner of Hat Daddy's Hat Store.
Yeah, it's in Sacramento. If y'all need some hats, come on over here. Hat Daddy got every hat you think you might want in here, and he's a nice guy. So yeah, the Daddy Shoes Legacy Tour is like a baby of mine. It's something I've been wanting to do for years. Mm-hmm. And I've been pulling all the people together for this tour, and it's a play. I wrote the play.
Okay.
So it's gonna be a play and a concert. And we're shooting at some big sponsors right now. The proposal's being written up. So wish me luck with that. I think it's a go. We're gonna have, tentatively, we'll have Muddy Waters' son, that's Mud Morrisfield. We'll have T.J. Hooker, that's Johnny Taylor's son. We'll have Joe Tex Jr., Don't Bump with No Big Fat Woman. Yeah. We'll have Little Milton Jr., Little Bluebird. Then we'll have Bobby Wilson, that's Jackie Wilson's son, Lonely Teardrops. And then we'll have Ray Charles' daughter, Hope Miss Sheila. This is all tentative, but it's in the works.
Okay.
And we'll have B.B. King's daughters, Claudette and Shirley, mm-hmm. and maybe Rita too. Rita's my girl. And then we'll have let me see what other one. Oh, T.J. Hooker, that's Johnny Taylor's son. Yeah, so yeah, we'll have all the kids of all the famous blues singers, and we'll do a 20-city tour with the play. You know, there'll be a 30-minute play before the concert.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Something short and sweet and to the point. Daddy's Shoes Legacy Tour. So make sure and keep that, you guys, in your mental Rolodex, because it's coming to a city near you. And we're gonna do this thing. And yeah, I really appreciate you, Miss Marilyn, being on your show and being able to reach the people, because I had a time that I was supposed to be in Palo Alto and I didn't get to perform. I'm not gonna talk about why and why not, but a lot of people wanted to see me sing my song, Rang, 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 and I didn't get to perform it in Palo Alto. God bless Palo Alto Pat, Patrick Brock. Man, we miss you. We love you. Big ups to the people of Palo Alto and all the Bay Area people we see, because Bobby had a strong, strong fan base. Ruthie's Inn on San Pablo, Circle Star on Whipple Road. Bobby performed all over San Francisco and the Bay Area. And, you know, I'm just trying to bring his flavor back and keep his legacy alive. And embrace these people. Y'all probably remember me. I was a little kid on stage playing drums, you know, before my little brother Roderick started playing. But yeah, all those people that I met back in the day, I hope to see you guys all again. Once again, October 25th at the Oakland Soul.
Well, with that, Sonny Bland, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and congratulations on getting your award.
Oh, thank you. I want to thank Mr. Rick Warren again for, you know what I mean, making it possible for me to get this award, and, you know, by the People's Nomination, the Black Musical Association, and Eddie Robinson in Houston, Texas. I want to say big ups to him, and a big ups to Don Samuels in Houston, and all the people cross country to keep the blues alive. And I love you, Miss Marilyn, for what you do, and I look forward to being on your show again. And the people can reach me at 916-821-5931. Sonny Blue Bland, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm the funnest little feeling. It was something you said. You got me walking on the tip of my toes. My hat's on the side of my head. All of my troubles I'm ended for you. My needle and thread. You got me walking on the tip of my toes. My hat's on the side. Wonderful, wonderful smile. I fell from the start. You should listen for a little while, do a thump, 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 and I'm a poor little heart. My troubles are in it, man. My needle and tail. You got me walking on the tip of my toes. My hat's on the side of my head.
Bacheni ngangqomi kwaZulu
ngoba ngqome mapatheni
ngangqomi kwaZulu
ngangqome mapatheni
ngqomi kwaZulu
abangqome mapatheni
ngangqomi kwaZulu
ngangqome mapatheni
ngqomi kwaZulu
abangqome mapatheni
ngangqomi
kwaZulu ngangqome mapatheni
ngqomi kwaZulu
abangqome mapatheni
ngiqome kwaZulu
yelela ngiqome mapatheni
ngiqome kwaZulu
abangqome mapatheni
kweke ngiye kwaZulu kwafelu
kweke ngiye kwaZulu kwafelu
bathi kweke ngiye kwaZulu kwafelu
kweke ngiye kwaZulu kwafelu
KPOO, San Francisco.